Yeah, Michael's back. Michael's back. Oh my goodness. It's so much fun to be with my son on Sunday night. And there are times when he can't come, but he can't be on with me. But oh my gosh, I'm excited he's returning tonight. Welcome back, son. How are you?
I am fantastic. Thank you so much. It was a busy weekend. I was doing a lot of talking in loud spaces, which is why I sound like this, which is always a good reason to be a little bit hoarse.
Okay, here's the thing I get asked all the time. What does Michael do at Amazon? Explain it to us.
Okay. What does he do? What does that say? I work in localization, and I localize the trailers for the largest TV shows at Amazon Prime Video, which means if you were to see a trailer for the Lord of the Rings, which is the title I just finished working on, if you were to see a trailer for that TV show.
The Lord of the Rings, like the Ring of Power?
The Lord of the Rings, the Rings of Power, the brand new Amazon Prime Video TV show that just launched on September 2nd. So I have spent the last many, many months working on that title, which I'm very proud to have worked on. And so if you were to have watched any of the trailers that we released for that title, which there were several, you watched it in a foreign language, either dubbed in a foreign language or subtitled in a foreign language, I was part of the very, very, very small team of people who oversaw the process of making that happen. We actually produced the localized versions of those trailers. So I've worked in localization or post-production in some capacity for about 10 years. Disney was my main client for probably 4 or 5 years of my career, and I got to work on a lot of Marvel content, Avengers Infinity War, Black Panther, Ant-Man and the Wasp. I got to work on the Hunger Games. I got to work on the Twilight Saga, the James Bond film, Spectre. So I've gotten to work on some really big titles throughout my career, thankfully. But this one definitely takes the cake, and that, of course, the Lord of the Rings of Power is the most expensive show in history. To be a part of that in some small part was truly an amazing experience. And if you haven't seen the show, check it out because it is beautiful. I really enjoyed watching it.
Oh, that's awesome, Michael. You explained it so well. I can actually understand it now. I appreciate that. I've called you and go, so now what? What is it you do?
It's not just you. There are people in my industry, the people in post-production. I have coworkers throughout my whole career. And they go, so localization, what is that? You make closed caption files? No. So what was subtitled? Yes. And dub. What's a dub? How does that work? And then when I really, diving into the technical aspects and all the rules and how one decides how to localize something in reference to how an actual platform works, Prime Video versus Disney Plus versus Netflix, the rules change in terms of what the platforms can and can't do. And that's what really gets technical, and I'll start going on about, this and that, and people just, their eyes glaze over, and they're like, what?
Too much information.
I've had to just practice explaining localization in simpler terms.
Yeah. Well, I tell you, you've been really busy. You did something called D23. Tell us what that's about.
Yeah, so D23, first of all, I'll just say I have never gone to a Comic-Con. Here in San Diego, I've never gone to one on the East Coast. I've never gone to WonderCon. I haven't gone to any of the kind of nerd awesome conventions that are out there that are really fun and really, really huge, even though I live in the center of some of the biggest ones in the world. D23 is Disney's kind of their own Comic-Con. It's all of their intellectual property in one convention where you get to hear all these huge announcements of what's happening, not just with Disney Plus TV shows, but all of their various properties around the world, all their parks, the changes being made in the parks, the new movies coming out. And of course, the stars show up to do presentations on stage to present their new entities, which is the same thing that you would see at Comic-Con or a larger convention like that. And of course, Disney will show up and do a whole Marvel panel at Comic-Con in the same way that Prime Video had a whole panel for their content at Comic-Con. But D23 is really a convention for Disney fans and fans of all of their intellectual property. That said, I was really excited because I walked in there and there was an exhibit that was being co-produced or presented by Amazon. I was like, ha ha, we are here. So it was cool to still see my company at D23 in partnership. And they actually had Walt Disney's plane, his private jet that he used to fly around the world. They had it in the convention center, and it was beautifully lit. And it was presented by Amazon, where you get to go see this plane. They had some of his original clothing and seats from the plane itself. And it was awe-inspiring to walk into an indoor space and see this gleaming, you know, circa 1950s or 60s, I'm assuming, plane. That was a great exhibit. And it was cool to not feel like I was a traitor to my current company while I was appreciating my former client.
Yeah, right. Yeah, but I think that I can't imagine someone being upset about that. But
no, of course not. I just thought it was cool to see Amazon in partnership with one of the booths at the convention. But as I mentioned, I've never gone to any of these. And so a friend of ours actually had tickets. He had passed it for the weekend, and he said, I can't use it. I'm going to be out of town. Do you guys want to go? And we said, sure. So at the very last minute, we got two passes to go to D23. And that, of course, meant that we weren't going to get into any of the panel discussions. More importantly, we didn't try to get into those because we knew there's long lines, fans who have been wanting to go to those for a long time. And we weren't really there to, you know, go to one panel or another. It was just to kind of experience it and see what it's like. And I got to tell you, I was really hungry, first of all. But so thank goodness there was an entire row of food trucks outside of the convention center. And I was like, yes, I'll go there. I'm going to get some food and some fries. Cause I was like, why do I feel in this haze? I'm moving slow. And I was like, oh, I haven't eaten. I just drove an hour to Anaheim. So first,
oh, man, when you are hangry, it's just not pretty. It's not pretty.
Right. And, like, I was enjoying myself, but I was like, there's something about this that's just not doing it for me. And I think I'm starving. So we finally got some food.
Don't say starving. We're not starving.
No, I shouldn't say starving. I was very hungry, and we were in the convention center. And by Disney magic, after eating, suddenly everything was fabulous. Everything was so much fun. And I resurfaced to the land of those who aren't, you know, begging for hamburgers. And I realized that the costumes around me were just extraordinary. Because although in Disneyland proper, you can't cosplay as the actual Disney characters themselves, because they don't want park guests being confused as to if you are an actual character, that's part of the experience, or if you're just a guest dressed as a character. But at D23, you can and are encouraged to dress up as your favorite Disney character in the most extravagant way. I mean, if you can just like them, go for it. And as I have seen pictures from other conventions, the fans did not disappoint at D23. There were just some beautiful outfits, really cool renditions of various costumes. And the diversity across the board was also wonderful. You know, it was cool to just see such a great blend of cultures at this one place, all coming there to celebrate our love for the mouse and all things that are part of the house, the mouse. I was taking pictures of all the costumes and seeing the huge posters on the wall. And it was inspiring, frankly. I mean, now that I worked on a major marketing campaign, kind of seeing the other side of this, it was inspiring to see the commerce side of this, and how you can take something so beloved and elevate that interest into something really grand, and how you can have people interact with your content and really what that does, and to see that at scale in this huge convention center. And I say scale in a business sense, but also the literal scale. I mean, on the main showroom, these exhibits for each brand were enormous. We're talking 20-foot tall walls and video screens and costumes. I mean, it's big. Everything in there feels huge. And it was just nerd heaven. I loved it. I wish I would have brought a costume just because I would have fit right in. And
speaking of costumes, Halloween is around the corner. And I'm curious to know what your costume is this year.
I'm not ready for it yet. It's September.
Come on. Costumes, people are buying costumes for Halloween for real. I don't see any pumpkins either, but I'm talking about people that really want to get out and have some fun costumes. And Disney went all out, of course, with costumes. I looked I'll look that up to see some of the costumes that they have. And your two nieces would, especially the youngest, would love, love, love to wear some of those princess dresses, although they're a little creepy when it's for Halloween. So I wouldn't do that. I wouldn't give her that. No, she'd love it, but she won't know.
It's for kids. I think a princess dress or something happy for kids is an appropriate Halloween
costume. Oh, no. But they have some of those princess costumes that look a little dark, you know?
Oh, yeah.
As
a person who inherited a love for sparkly costumes on stage from his mother, I shockingly...
Wait! Did you just put that on me for real? Oh, my gosh. Not fair.
Shockingly, I am really bad at planning my Halloween costumes. I will work for months on a costume I'm going to wear on stage. I'm really big on it in that I own quite the amount of extravagant costume pieces that I wear when I'm performing as a magician. But I'm not going to wear those to a party because I don't want to get them messed up. I'm quite precious about them. So when it comes to my actual costume, I feel like, well, I'm too creative to just buy a costume, so I have to make something, and then I don't. And so then, like, the day before, I'm like, oh, man, I got to go to the store and do something. If you recall,
that's your MO, but you have come up with some beautiful costumes.
This is
incredible.
True. But, you know, we used to have the world's largest, well, second largest Halloween festival in West Hollywood, Halloween Carnival, that happened in the center of WeHo, as we call it. 600,000 people would descend upon that one street. All the streets are blocked off. Some of the best costumes in the world. All the bars are open. A huge party, right? Canceled during the lockdown, like everything was. Canceled the next year, and everyone expected 2022 for it to come back. And lo and behold, the city of West Hollywood said, "Nah, we're good." So silently and without fanfare, one of the largest Halloween parties in the country just disappeared. So I think the first question is not what I'm going to wear. It's where we're going to go.
Right. And so I'm sure there are a bunch of house parties, too, or neighborhood parties.
There are, but, I mean, it's Los Angeles. So when we say a Halloween house party here, I'll give you an example. A Halloween house party I went to several years ago was with the Winklevoss twins, who, of course, are the ones that sued...
Right, and they should have.
Sued Mark Zuckerberg for Facebook. It was their house that was it in Bel Air? No, West Hollywood Hills. And a house that they basically purchased to throw parties, and it was star-studded, famous people all over the place, costumes were out of this world. You know, that's the kind of house parties people have here, where it's like 300 people in a mansion. And it's catered, and there's like a staff of 30, and they it's just a house party for Halloween. There's DJs, ballet service. So yeah, there's your friend's house party down the street, and then there's the LA house party, which if you can get into one of those, absolutely go, because they're very fun.
Well, there you go, Michael. We got to take a break. We'll come back in a moment. It is now 10:24 here at WCCO. Welcome back. It's such a pleasure to have the Mom and Michael Hour and to be able to talk with my son on Sunday nights. It really matters to me as a mother, as someone who thinks he is just amazing. I am so blessed. I always say to my children, thank you for choosing me as your mother. So it's wonderful. Michael, I have to tell you, we have this looming situation here tonight, all day today, in fact, where the nurses are talking about striking right here in the great Twin Cities. And it's a 3-day Minnesota nurses strike, and it could happen tomorrow morning. At 7 a.m. Monday, 15,000 nurses are scheduled to strike against 16 major hospitals in the Twin Cities, Moose Lake and Duluth. Now, this will be the largest nursing strike in U.S. history if it happens. I'm just curious to know, what is your reaction to just hearing that? Because can you imagine the people in the hospital that would not have a nurse at their bed for 3 days?
Absolutely. I mean, and that is terrifying. But the first question I have is, what are the demands they are trying to get that would warrant a strike this large? Because often, which I haven't done the research on this, so I don't know what they're asking for, but often when I do dig into a strike of this size, it's things that sound really basic. It's usually like, you know, wages that are in line with inflation and better health care and better sick leave. It's usually, you know, basic things that any employee would want.
More safety, yeah, and absolutely.
So, right. It's just like a better wages, more safety, all the things that a patient at a hospital would want for the nurse taking care of them. So even without knowing what they're asking for, I imagine my reaction to this would be the same as it is with most of these large strikes, where I go, well, why can't you just give them what they need? And of course, there's the other side. You know, it raises the cost of health care, it raises insurance premiums, it makes certain things more expensive, or it would bankrupt a hospital. Hospitals are already struggling with their margins. Yes, I know that there's a large counter argument often, but I'm like, 15,000, just give them what they want. They're nurses. They're literally saving lives. I make trailers and movies. They're saving lives. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And during the worst part of COVID, they were the ones that were staying, you know, working long, long hours, not their usual mm-hmm. hours, because there were so many people so sick and close to death. They gave all of themselves to us. And I'm just stunned that any hospital would say to them, I'm sorry, we just can't give you that kind of increase. It's crazy to me. What the nurses are doing, they're asking for a 30% pay hike. 30%. Now, to me, a CEO will get far more than 30%, right? And they're not mm-hmm. doing the work of a nurse. They're not. They're not doing the work. So, you know, you can't keep going like this with no nurses. You just, who would think that that's okay? Unless you're willing to invest in the technology that's going to cost you way more than a 30% pay hike, right?
Well, it's interesting, not knowing the current numbers, if I recall correctly, there's still a nurse shortage in the U.S. at every major hospital in all the big cities. Right. So a 30% pay raise sounds significant. I mean, that's a really, really big number for a raise for any employee. That said, if you have highly skilled employees who are doing the work of two people because they're working two shifts back to back, or that they don't have the support to even take PTO and see their families, it's not really 30% for one person. It's 30% to retain an employee as opposed to having to pay twice that much to retrain and try to source a new employee.
Right.
Again, not knowing the terms, but knowing some bit about how one would approach this negotiation, I'm hoping they can just land somewhere in between. If it's not 30, it's like, how about 20, 25? Well, you know, can we give something up here, you know? So I'm always astounded when, to your point, systems struggle to support those that our society needs the most, the people who are the very fabric of our social contracts, you know, and that extends to all people in service, whether you're in healthcare, whether you're a police officer, which I have, you know, lots of opinions about that, but still, you're still serving and teachers. And why are we always so hesitant to pay people in those professions as much as they should be paid?
I pay them a living wage. If you're spending 24 hours at the hospital often, mm-hmm. come on. People have family. These nurses have families and husbands and friends and relationships. It's like, why wouldn't they do this? This is so incredible to me. They, of course, deserve it in my own eyes. I've had nurses at my bedside. You know, when I had knee surgery, you name it. Mm-hmm. I met one. She was at the show last night, by the way. And she said to me,
really?
I was one of your nurses. Yeah. So, you know, I don't get it, Michael, but we will continue to talk about this over the next 3 days here in Minnesota for sure. And maybe next Sunday we can revisit it. But we got to take a break, and we're going to come back. And I want to talk about 9/11 with you, because this is the 21st anniversary today. We'll be back. It is now 10:36 here at WCCO. Welcome back. Before we start talking about 9/11, Michael, I'm concerned about water. I know you've been hearing about some of the lakes that are disappearing, whether it's in Vegas, whether it's in Salt Lake City in Utah, that particular one called the Great Salt Lake. It's just unbelievable. If you look at the images of what it looked like and then what it looks like now, you just can't believe that's all the water left in the Great Salt Lake. It is absolutely shocking. Do you ever think about the possibility of water going away in Los Angeles? Because, of course, the Los Angeles River does not always fill up every year. We're hopeful that it does, because it really helps, but not every year.
I mean, we're in a drought right now, for sure. So I tend not to think about water running out in L.A. first. I think of it running in Las Vegas, because we know that that will happen. That countdown to Vegas not having water has already begun. In fact, hotels are already storing water for the future so that they can stay open, you know, which is why I need to go to Vegas. You know, I want to go support them while they're still here, because I'm just such a good person, and that's why I have to go and eat food and see shows.
I'm sorry to laugh, but, you know, are you serious?
No, I'm totally joking. I'm completely joking. I will say there are times where I'm like, you know, we should get our Vegas trips now, because I genuinely believe Vegas is not going to be there in the same capacity in the future. And if it is there, it'll be a smaller version, and it'll be wildly more expensive, because you're going to have to pay for the experience of going into the middle of the desert and having water. I mean, the Wynn and the Encore are Joey and I's favorite hotels in Las Vegas. And there's nothing like staying there and looking down on a pristine green golf course.
I just couldn't believe it the first time I saw it. I couldn't believe it.
It's incredible, and it's beautiful.
Why would they do that?
Because they know they're going to get people to fly from all over the world to play this amazing golf course in the middle of the desert. But even if you drive to Palm Springs, which we do a few times a year, if you go in the nice areas, there are pristine golf courses in Palm Springs. You're in the desert. It's 120 degrees. There's a shortage of water. But they're paying money to create these experiences, to have these golf courses there. But eventually, money is simply not going to be enough to buy access to water, because actual needs of water are going to trump someone else's luxury. So I think Vegas will go first. And then, you know, L.A. has – we've been in a drought for quite some time. It did actually rain this week, in a small bit of rain, which was incredible. We had a thunderstorm a couple weekends ago with high winds, not in L.A. proper, but a bit more east of here. So we've gotten some rain, but we're still deeply in a drought trying to conserve water. But obviously, this city simply cannot sustain the amount of water that we all use and the growth of the city. So it's us. But it's also the planet. You know, climate change is very real.
It is.
It's very happening. So
but here's what I don't understand, Michael. Yeah. Forgive me for interrupting. I don't understand why they have not built a system. Just like they have oil pipes under the ground, why can't we have water pipes? So the states that have plenty of water, like they don't have drought, they always have plenty of water, then we should be able to take some of that water to those cities in certain states that can replenish the water that's missing. I don't know why we can't do that. Why can't we do that?
That's the question everyone has asked for years. When there's a huge flood in one part of the country, why can't you take that water and move it over here? But I don't know the most cogent answer to that. Right. I would imagine it's just because the actual physical lift or the economics of moving dirty water, because really it hasn't been purified, doesn't really work.
Yeah, but so is the lake. It's dirty water too. You know, you used to be able to look down into a lake, not anymore.
Right, and people you can buy electricity from other states. You can buy heat from other states. I mean, you can buy other utilities, gas from other areas that can be brought over to you. When we see, you know, a flood on one side and a drought on the other, if a place is flooding, the last thing they care about is how to move that water to L.A. or to Vegas. They're just trying to save lives and save their neighborhoods.
Homes.
So,
yeah.
And it's overwhelming their entire piping system. So if you have that situation where you have a rainfall that heavy, how would you even process the water and move it to a different location if you can't even
do it. If you can take the out of the ocean, the salt. But there's a word for it. I can't remember. There's a machine, a gigantic machine that can do that. What is it?
Salination.
Oh, salination. Exactly. We can do that now. There are other countries doing it, right? And it's a very delicate process to put that salt back into the ocean. But they figured it out. If we can do that, we can't take the floods that are going on in this state and make sure that as soon as those floods begin, send them through the pipelines to the state that needs it. Now, the question is, how in the world do you know ahead of time if that state needs it?
You won't. Exactly. If there was proper planning in place to that degree, Katrina wouldn't have happened. You know, look, cities simply are not forward-thinking about their own people enough to support another city, because as we've seen, when disasters hit, people die. You know, so I think the first order is just, how do you protect the people who live in those areas when the disaster hits? And then once we have that down, which we surely do not in America, once we have that worked out, we can talk about how to move water from one place to another.
If they can take it out of the ocean and make it clean water you can drink, they ought to be able to do it. That's all I know. We've got the brain trust that can do that.
Of course,
to your
point, that process is delicate. It takes time. It's very expensive. You can move water. We move huge amounts of water across states all the time. But usually when people talk about this, it isn't about consistent water in one area moving to a different area. That happens. We're talking about unexpected enormous amount of water in one area and then moving that piece over. But it's an unexpected piece. That's the piece where, sure, there is technology that can do it, but the technology we have currently, as far as I know, can't do it at scale when it's unexpected.
I'm just saying that they could. They don't. But I believe that they can. Now, Michael, I have to ask you before we have to take a break. Remembering 9/11, of course, this is the 21st anniversary. I think you were, how old were you when that happened? You must have been 16.
I was a sophomore in high school and I was a year ahead, so 14.
14, wow. Yeah, you were at St. Thomas Academy. And I remember that day. I remember what happened. Do you remember or you just don't think about it?
Yeah. I don't think about it as much, but I mean, if someone asks me about it, it always pops up. I was in French class with Professor Maureen Pelletier, and I just remember how quiet she got. And, you know, we had cell phones and there was text messages, but there wasn't social media yet. There was no Facebook alert. There was no iPhone alert. It was just, you know, your basic phone. So news spread across the school intercom system or word of mouth. Your teacher went or someone popped in the room and said, hey, something's happening. And once we got into what was going on, she turned the television on in the classroom. And what hit me the most as a young person in that moment was less the images of the first plane and more watching her face. It was the hurt, the dread, the concern, and the pain on her face that really hit me. Something is really happening. Because if you recall, we didn't quite know what was going on at first. But just seeing her reaction, I said, okay, the adults in the room are looking at this differently. And they shifted from, oh, it's going to be fine, to let's contact the parents. What's going on? Do we send kids home or not? And that sticks with you for the rest of your life.
We were often late getting you to school. We, when I say me and you, you didn't drive. And let me tell you something. You know, I used to scream at you. Remember, I would say on the intercom, Michael, it's time to get up, honey.
Mm-hmm. Real nice the first time.
And I go, Michael, it's time to get up, honey. You have to get to school. And then I'll, you know, that sound. And then I go, Michael, seriously, you got to get up because I'm coming in. And one time, I remember I got Venice up. Well, she was already up and dressed. And I said, come on, you got to help me with this. And we pulled you off the bed and I threw water on your bed and on you.
Yes.
Do you remember that?
You did. I do. I do.
I was like, you have got to get going.
I kind of enjoyed it, though. It was kind of fun.
Oh, God, don't tell me that. I never heard you say that. Are you kidding me? I thought I was like Superwoman.
Throwing me off. Pulling the entire mattress off the box screen and then tipping it over, throwing me on the floor.
And throwing water at you at the same time.
Right. And one time I just grabbed the blanket and just kind of curled back up in it. I was never a morning person.
Are you now a morning person?
I mean,
don't answer that. Don't answer.
By default of being an adult, I do it, but like any adult does, I don't like it. This is a complete pivot, but I will say the other day I was at home and I took like a little nap for 15 minutes. But I mentioned that to say when it's bright lights in the house and there's a little bit of noise and there's someone in the house, you know, maybe in the kitchen or a different room doing something else. it relaxes me. And I tend to fall asleep when I don't normally take naps. And it's because of mornings like that, on the weekends especially, where I was sleeping in because I didn't like morning, and I could hear you or someone else in the other part of the house. There was laughter. There was, you know, motion going on. And it was bright light coming through my windows. Those are some of my most peaceful parts of my adolescence. And so when that happens here at home, it still makes me fall asleep because it just puts me in such a zen. So thank you for those beautiful moments in our house when I was growing up.
Okay, I got to think about that all night. Oh, my goodness. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
That's beautiful, Michael. And your father, by the way, was always up and early. Always.
Mm-hmm.
Your sister was always up and early. Your mother was up and early.
Well,
not
okay,
always,
so here we
but
are.
I was up. And then there was you. So,
and that's why, because you were all up doing things, and I was just under the covers, blissful. Like, oh, everyone's up and awake, and it's sunny, let me just doze back to sleep for a little bit. It was wonderful.
You are a wonderful son. You really are, Michael. But oh,
not
my God,
the thing that your
moments.
Mom normally tells you when you never get out of bed on time, but thank you. I will accept that love.
I remember the first time I took you to school. Oh, I know. We have to take a break, don't we? We got a break, and then we'll come and finish up, Michael. We'll be back.
All right, cool.
It is now 10:53 here at WCCO. Oh, my goodness, as we wrap up this hour, I have had such joy tonight talking with you and talking online on air with you. I just really appreciate you listening and sticking with me over these years. It really means so much to me. I want to say thank you to all of the fans, and if not fans, just those that were in attendance at our concert for Jovita and I last night. And it was just the spirit in the room, the feeling in the room was so special, Michael. And I am so excited that people came out and really supported us. It was just beautiful. I came home completely satiated with love and joy and all of it. And it just felt so great. I slept really well. So, Michael, one more time, 9/11, what do you think of it today? When you think about it, what do you think of?
It's a scar of the country, you know, and it's like, as I posted on social media, there was not 9/11, and then there was 1/6.
It is now 10:36 here at WCCO. Welcome back. Before we start talking about 9/11, Michael, I'm concerned about water. I know you've been hearing about some of the lakes that are disappearing, whether it's in Vegas, whether it's in Salt Lake City in Utah, that particular one called the Great Salt Lake. It's just unbelievable. If you look at the images of what it looked like and then what it looks like now, you just can't believe that's all the water left in the Great Salt Lake. It is absolutely shocking. Do you ever think about the possibility of water going away in Los Angeles? Because, of course, the Los Angeles River does not always fill up every year. We're hopeful that it does because it really helps, but not every year.
I mean, we're in a drought right now, for sure. So I tend not to think about water running out in L.A. first. I think of it running in Las Vegas because we know that that will happen. That countdown to Vegas not having water has already begun. In fact, hotels are already storing water for the future so that they can stay open, you know, which is why I need to go to Vegas. You know, I want to go support them while they're still here because I'm just such a good person, and that's why I have to go and eat food and see shows.
I'm sorry to laugh, but, you know, are you serious?
No, I'm totally joking. I'm completely joking. I will say there are times where I'm like, you know, we should get our Vegas trips now because I genuinely believe Vegas is not going to be there in the same capacity in the future. And if it is there, it'll be a smaller version, and it'll be wildly more expensive because you're going to have to pay for the experience of going into the middle of the desert and having water. I mean, the Wynn and the Encore are Joey and I's favorite hotels in Las Vegas. And there's nothing like staying there and looking down on a pristine green golf course.
I just couldn't believe it the first time I saw it. I couldn't believe it.
It's incredible, and it's beautiful.
Why would they do that?
Because they know they're going to get people to fly from all over the world to play this amazing golf course in the middle of the desert. But even if you drive to Palm Springs, which we do a few times a year, if you go in the nice areas, there are pristine golf courses in Palm Springs. You're in the desert. It's 120 degrees. There's a shortage of water. But they're paying money to create these experiences, to have these golf courses there. But eventually, money is simply not going to be enough to buy access to water, because actual needs of water are going to trump someone else's luxury. So I think Vegas will go first. And then, you know, L.A. has, we've been in a drought for quite some time. It did actually rain this week, in a small bit of rain, which was incredible. We had a thunderstorm a couple weekends ago with high winds, not in L.A. proper, but a bit more east of here. So we've gotten some rain, but we're still deeply in a drought trying to conserve water. But obviously, this city simply cannot sustain the amount of water that we all use and the growth of the city. So it's us. But it's also the planet. You know, climate change is very real. It is. It's very happening. So
but here's what I don't understand, Michael. Yeah. Forgive me for interrupting. I don't understand why they have not built a system. Just like they have oil pipes under the ground, why can't we have water pipes? So the states that have plenty of water, like they don't have drought, they always have plenty of water, then we should be able to take some of that water to those cities in certain states that can replenish the water that's missing. I don't know why we can't do that. Why can't we do that?
That's the question everyone has asked for years. When there's a huge flood in one part of the country, why can't you take that water and move it over here? But I don't know the most cogent answer to that. Right. I would imagine it's just because the actual physical lift or the economics of moving dirty water, because really it hasn't been purified, doesn't really work.
Yeah, but so is the lake. It's dirty water too. you used to be able to look down into a lake, not anymore.
Right, and people you can buy electricity from other states. You can buy heat from other states. I mean, you can buy other utilities, gas from other areas that can be brought over to you. When we see, you know, a flood on one side and a drought on the other, if a place is flooding, the last thing they care about is how to move that water to L.A. or to Vegas. They're just trying to save lives and save their neighborhoods.
Homes.
So,
yeah.
And it's overwhelming their entire piping system. So if you have that situation where you have a rainfall that heavy, how would you even process the water and move it to a different location if you can't even
do it. If you can take the out of the ocean, the salt. But there's a word for it. I can't remember. There's a machine, a gigantic machine that can do that. What is it?
Salination.
Oh, salination. Exactly. We can do that now. There are other countries doing it, right? And it's a very delicate process to put that salt back into the ocean. But they figured it out. If we can do that, we can't take the floods that are going on in this state and make sure that as soon as those floods begin, send them through the pipelines to the state that needs it. Now, the question is, how in the world do you know ahead of time if that state needs it?
You won't. Exactly. If there was proper planning in place to that degree, Katrina wouldn't have happened. You know, look, cities simply are not forward-thinking about their own people enough to support another city, because as we've seen, when disasters hit, people die. You know, so I think the first order is just, how do you protect the people who live in those areas when the disaster hits? And then once we have that down, which we surely do not in America, once we have that worked out, we can talk about how to move water from one place to another.
If they can take it out of the ocean and make it clean water you can drink, they ought to be able to do it. That's all I know. We've got the brain trust that can do that.
Of course,
but to your
point, that process is delicate. It takes time. It's very expensive. You can move water. We move huge amounts of water across states all the time. But usually when people talk about this, it isn't about consistent water in one area moving to a different area. That happens. We're talking about unexpected enormous amount of water in one area and then moving that piece over. But it's an unexpected piece. That's the piece where, sure, there is technology that can do it, but the technology we have currently, as far as I know, can't do it at scale when it's unexpected.
I'm just saying that they could. They don't, but I believe that they can. Now, Michael, I have to ask you before we have to take a break. Remembering 9/11, of course, this is the 21st anniversary. I think you were... How old were you when that happened?
I was,
you must have been 16.
No, I was a sophomore in high school, and I was a year ahead, so 14.
14, wow. Yeah, you were at St. Thomas Academy. And I remember that day. I remember what happened. Do you remember, or you just don't think about it?
I don't think about it as much, but I think if someone asks me about it, it always pops up. I was in French class with Professor Maureen Pelletier, and I just remember how quiet she got. And, you know, there was no – we had cell phones and there was text messages, but there wasn't social media yet. There was no Facebook alert. There was no iPhone alert. It was just, you know, your basic phone. So news spread across the school intercom system or word of mouth. Your teacher went or someone popped in the room and said, hey, something's happening. And once we got into what was going on, she turned the television on in the classroom. And what hit me the most as a young person in that moment was less the images of the first plane and more watching her face. It was the hurt, the dread, the concern, and the pain on her face that really hit me. Something is really happening. Because if you recall, we didn't quite know what was going on at first. But just seeing her reaction, I said, okay, the adults in the room are looking at this differently. And they shifted from, oh, it's going to be fine, to let's contact the parents. What's going on? Do we send kids home or not? And that sticks with you for the rest of your life.
We were often late getting you to school. We, when I say me and you, and you didn't drive. And let me tell you something. You know, I used to scream at you. Remember, I would say, on the intercom, Michael, it's time to get up, honey.
Real nice the first time.
And I go, Michael, it's time to get up, honey. You have to get to school. And then I'll, you know, that sound. And then I go, Michael, seriously, you got to get up because I'm coming in. And one time, I remember I got Venice up. Well, she was already up and dressed. And I said, come on, you got to help me with this. And we pulled you off the bed, and I threw water on your bed and on you.
Yes.
Do you remember that?
You did. I do. I do.
I was like, you have got to get going.
I kind of enjoyed it, though. It was kind of fun.
Oh, like, God, don't tell me that. I never heard you say that. Are you kidding me? I thought I was like Superwoman.
Throwing me off, pulling the entire mattress off the box screen and then tipping it over, throwing me on the floor.
And I remember throwing water at you at the same time.
Right. And one time I just grabbed the blanket and just kind of curled back up in it. I was never a morning person.
Are you now a morning person?
I mean,
don't answer that. By default
of being an adult, I do it, but like any adult does, I don't like it. This is a complete pivot, but I will say the other day I was at home and I took like a little nap for 15 minutes. But I mentioned that to say when it's bright lights in the house and there's a little bit of noise and there's someone in the house, you know, maybe in the kitchen or a different room doing something else, it relaxes me. And I tend to fall asleep when I don't normally take naps. And it's because of mornings like that, on the weekends especially, where I was sleeping in because I didn't like morning, and I could hear you or someone else in the other part of the house. There was laughter. There was, you know, motion going on. And it was bright light coming through my windows. Those are some of my most peaceful parts of my adolescence. And so when that happens here at home, it still makes me fall asleep because it just puts me in such a zen. So thank you for those beautiful moments in our house when I was growing up.
Okay, I got to think about that all night. Oh, my goodness. Okay. Mm-hmm. That's beautiful, Michael. And your father, by the way, was always up and early. Always.
Mm-hmm.
Your sister was always up and early. Your mother was up and early.
Well,
not
okay.
always,
so here we
but
are.
I was up. And then there was you. So,
and that's why, because you were all up doing things, and I was just under the covers, blissful. Like, oh, everyone's up and awake, and it's sunny, let me just doze back to sleep for a little bit. It was wonderful.
You are a wonderful son. You really are, Michael. But, oh,
not
my God,
the thing that your
moments.
Mom normally tells you when you never get out of bed on time, but thank you. I will accept that love.
I remember the first time I took you to school. Oh, I know. We have to take a break, don't we? We got a break, and then we'll come and finish up, Michael. We'll be back.
All right, cool.
It is now 10:53 here at WCCO. Oh, my goodness, as we wrap up this hour, I have had such joy tonight talking with you and talking online on air with you. I just really appreciate you listening and sticking with me over these years. It really means so much to me. I want to say thank you to all of the fans, and if not fans, just those that were in attendance at our concert for Jovita and I last night. And it was just... the spirit in the room, the feeling in the room was so special, Michael. And I am so excited that people came out and really supported us. It was just beautiful. I came home completely satiated with love and joy and all of it. And it just felt so great. I slept really well. So, Michael, one more time. 9/11, what do you think of it today? When you think about it, what do you think of?
It's a scar of the country, you know, and it's like, as I posted on social media, there was not 9/11 and then there was 1/6. And so for me, they're on the same level. It's just further steps, further cuts into the fabric of America. So I'm hoping that we can continue to move forward from both terrorist attacks and turn out to be a better country in the end.
There are other countries that go through so much, you know, whether it's in the Middle East or, you know, we have the fights that went on for a very long time in Ireland. It's we know that sometimes it goes on, it seems like forever, and then it doesn't. And I keep saying to myself, when will everyone really get over this? I don't know if it's possible for Americans to get over it. But, you know, so many people still question the truths that have been presented and the falsehoods that have been presented. So as I think about 9/11, and, you know, there are still so many that helped get people out of the burning towers, and, you know, they're still sick. There are people who had the fire trucks and they went in, they climbed up those stairs to help anyone, and some of them are still so sick, many have died. And that what breaks my heart when I think about it. It was just sad. But
I don't think we should get over it. I think it's history. It's as important as some of the biggest and saddest moments of American history. I think we just have to grow from it, you know, and look at the lead up, the aftermath and all those things, and just hope that it never happens again and that we just don't repeat ourselves. You know, it isn't the first tragedy that this country has gone through, but it's the first of that particular kind. So, but yeah, just the word choice. I don't think we should get over it. We should just learn from it.
Yeah, we had one civil war and it still lingers. You know, so many people still talk about it, even though I wasn't even living and so many of us weren't around during that time. But that incredible civil war that didn't last long, I think it was 2 years or 4 years, Jonathan might know, but it's amazing. It was 1958 to 64, I think. So it was a little longer than I remember.
Great example of a thing that we learned from, and so now that we have people who were there at 1/6 who want to have another civil war, we can look at that through the proper lens and say, no, we're not going to do that again. You know, so that I think that's the important part of any countries aren't perfect, and just saying here's where we come from, and then when that comes back around in history and we have new people wanting the same tragedy, what can we do differently this time to make sure it doesn't happen again?
By the way, the Civil War was from April 12th, 1861 to April 9th, 1865, so almost 4 years to the day.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, so 4 years. But I thought it was 58. It wasn't 58. My goodness, my professor would have been very upset with me today.
You might. Yeah. Are you mistaking the Civil Rights Movement for?
No. Civil War.
Okay.
Nope, I thought it began in 58 and ended in 60-something, so there you go. It's been a pleasure, Michael, to have you on. It's always a pleasure to have you on. You make your mother so happy. I'm so honored to be your mother. You take care of yourself, okay?
You too. Love you so much.
I love you too. Bye, son. All right, Jonathan, it's been great. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Really fun. And I'm looking forward to next Sunday. I hope that all of you listening can stick and stay. And be with us next week as well. I've got some great topics I think you'll enjoy. And remember, there are often times when we ask you to participate. Take care. Good night. It is now 10:53 here at WCCO. Oh, my goodness, as we wrap up this hour, I have had such joy tonight talking with you and talking online on air with you. I just really appreciate you listening and sticking with me over these years. It really means so much to me. I want to say thank you to all of the fans, and if not fans, just those that were in attendance at our concert for Jovita and I last night. And it was just the spirit in the room, the feeling in the room was so special, Michael. And I am so excited that people came out and really supported us. It was just beautiful. I came home completely satiated with love and joy and all of it. And it just felt so great. I slept really well. So, Michael, one more time. 9/11, what do you think of it today? When you think about it, what do you think of?
It's a scar of the country, you know, and it's like, as I posted on social media, there was not 9/11, and then there was 1/6. And so for me, they're on the same level. It's just further steps, further cuts into the fabric of America. So I'm hoping that we can continue to move forward from both terrorist attacks and turn out to be a better country in the end.
There are other countries that go through so much, you know, whether it's in the Middle East or, you know, we have the fights that went on for a very long time in Scotland, not Scotland, but Ireland. It's we know that sometimes it goes on, it seems like forever, and then it doesn't. And I keep saying to myself, when will everyone really get over this? I don't know if it's possible for Americans to get over it. But, you know, so many people still question the truths that have been presented and the falsehoods that have been presented. So as I think about 9/11, and, you know, there are still so many that helped get people out of the burning towers, and, you know, they're still sick. There are people who had the fire trucks and they went in, they climbed up those stairs to help anyone, and some of them are still so sick, many have died. And that's what breaks my heart when I think about it. It was just sad. But
I don't think we should get over it. I think it's history. It's as important as some of the biggest and saddest moments of American history. I think we just have to grow from it, you know, and look at the lead up, the aftermath, and all those things, and just hope that it never happens again, and that we just don't repeat ourselves. You know, it isn't the first tragedy that this country has gone through, but it's the first of that particular kind. So, but yeah, just the word choice. I don't think we should get over it. We should just learn from it.
Yeah, we had one civil war, and it still lingers. You know, so many people still talk about it, even though I wasn't even living, and so many of us weren't around during that time. But that incredible civil war that didn't last long, I think it was 2 years or 4 years, Jonathan might know, but it's amazing. It was 1958 to 64, I think, so it was a little longer than I remember.
Great example of a thing that we learned from, and so now that we have people who were there at 1/6 who want to have another civil war, we can look at that through the proper lens and say, no, we're not going to do that again. You know, so that I think that's that important part of any countries aren't perfect, and just saying here's where we come from, and then when that comes back around in history and we have new people wanting the same tragedy, what can we do differently this time to make sure it doesn't happen again?
By the way, the Civil War was from April 12th, 1861 to April 9th, 1865, so almost 4 years to the day.
Oh, my gosh. Okay. So 4 years. But I thought it was 58. It wasn't 58. My goodness. My professor would have been very upset with me today.
You might. Yeah. Are you mistaking the Civil Rights Movement for?
No. Civil War.
Okay.
Nope. I thought it began in 58 and ended in 60-something. So there you go. It's been a pleasure, Michael, to have you on. It's always a pleasure to have you on. You make your mother so happy. I'm so honored to be your mother. You take care of yourself, okay?
You too. Love you so much.
I love you too. Bye, son. All right, Jonathan. It's been great. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Really fun. And I'm looking forward to next Sunday. I hope that all of you listening can stick and stay. And be with us next week as well. We've got some. I've got some great topics I think you'll enjoy. And remember, there are often times when we ask you to participate. Take care. Good night.